Hello, friends. Welcome to the Logistics of Logistics podcast. My name is Joe Lynch. Thank you so much for joining us today. On the Logistics of Logistics, I talk to experts in logistics and transportation, warehousing, fulfillment, supply chain, and of course, technology. And during these interviews, I'm always the one asking the dumb questions. I ask the dumb questions so you don't have to. Today's topic is building a global logistics juggernaut with my friend Norhan Behrouti. Norhan is Global Chief Revenue Officer at Ajax Logistics Services, Saudi Arabia's fastest growing transportation company. Norhan and the Ajax team are building a global logistics juggernaut because there is a tremendous need. Saudi Arabia is a large affluent market that many U.S. e-commerce brands and retailers haven't tapped because there wasn't a logistics company that could adequately serve that market. There is now. Please take a listen and learn why Ajax should be your Middle Eastern logistics partner. How's it going, Norhan?
So far, so good. Thanks for having me, Joe.
I'm excited to talk to you about this topic. We've talked a few times before we hit record. So, Norhan, please introduce yourself and your company and where you're calling from today.
My name is Norhan Behrouti. I'm the Global Chief Revenue Officer for Ajax Logistics, and I'm calling in from Dallas, Texas.
Nice, nice. So tell us a little about Ajax, and that's A-J-E-X.
Yes, Ajax is a global logistics company. So if you want to think about it in terms of the U.S., we are the UPS of Saudi Arabia and Middle East. We're building that aura around the Saudi market, you can say. In terms of just logistics, we do air freight, ocean freight, last mile, e-commerce, and defense.
Very nice, very nice. You said something to me the first time we talked, which is a few weeks ago. You said Ajax is the local hero. And I was like, and I never heard that term before. What is the local hero?
So mandated with the Vision 2030, part of the mandate is to create local heroes. And part of that in the logistics industry, we are building a local hero within the Middle East, especially for Saudi, to be a household name, just like UPS, FedEx, or DHL. So those companies today are local heroes for the United States in terms of UPS and FedEx, for Europe, DHL. Also, there's many others around Europe and Asia. So like China, there's SF International. So we are building the local hero for Saudi Arabia in terms of logistics.
Yeah, I never heard that term before, but it makes sense. And we just take for granted that we have a very well-developed logistics network, many well-developed logistics networks that serve us. And when we get one day delivery or next day or in 2 hours, you go, yeah, that's what we expect. But that's not happening everywhere in the Middle East or in Saudi Arabia. And we have most of the countries over there, the vast majority, are our allies for one, but a lot of them are very affluent markets that can't get the same goods that we get here on the same timing that we get here.
Absolutely. So America has had their head start in terms of logistics and zoning themselves. The invention of the zip code itself really took logistics to another level here in the U.S., and then other countries followed suit. Whereas the Middle East and North Africa are very young countries. You could say Dubai or the Arab Emirates, Oman. Yeah, they're less than 50 years old. In terms of head start or what we're trying to build, these places have kind of paradigm shift or leaped from what they had and immediately into new technological advancements. I'll give you the case, let's say in Africa, like Ghana, they skipped the landline because they didn't have the infrastructure to landline and they went straight into mobile. So people don't have landlines or don't have the concept of landlines. So here in the US,
I think China's that way.
We still use landline, we still use checks. The most affluent banking system in Africa is mobile banking, and we're just catching up right here in the US with mobile banking. So they've leaped over the entire evolution of infrastructure. Same case with the Middle East and North Africa and Saudi Arabia. They're skipping those traditional or archaic systems and straight into the new and advanced and the shiny stuff right from the get-go. And the population in the Middle East, or specifically in Saudi, you have 74 to 76% are less than 24 years old. So they're very affluent in terms of technology. So they use it, they know how to use it, and they don't have that learning curve, you can say.
Yeah, and it's funny. I heard somebody say this not so long ago. They said, when I go on the internet, I can go on the internet, any internet I want. I'm not getting, I live in Michigan, in the USA. I'm not getting the Michigan USA internet. I'm getting the internet that everyone on the planet gets. Exactly. Mine might be in English, but when I see a product and I say, oh, I'd like to buy that, I can buy it. That is not the case for everyone everywhere. And if you're Amazon or any other e-commerce company, you say, I need to continue my growth. I need to sell to all of the rest of the world. And we have to have that logistics infrastructure. And we'll come back to that. But Norhan, tell us a little bit about you. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Some career highlights before you joined Ajax and why you joined Ajax.
Absolutely. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I went to school in St. Anselm's. I got my master's degree and my BA degree in the Lebanese American University. Went to Lebanon for a while. And I ended up in the Middle East, just staying in the Middle East because I went to that area for my education. But career highlights, I started off in communication and brand. I worked within the entire GCC countries. In Saudi Arabia specifically, I worked for Saudi.
You got to explain what GCC country is to the rest of us.
Yeah, so GCC are all the oil countries like Saudi Arabia, Oman, Kuwait, Bahrain. So it's the Gulf Cooperative Council. They call them the GCC countries.
Oh, so I always thought it was Gulf Coast countries. Or what did you say?
No, cooperative.
Oh, okay. So they have the equivalent of NAFTA over there?
Yes, exactly. So they all share trade together. It's not an open border policy because of worker and labor and visa requirements for each one of them, but they're opening up bit by bit. So now if you get a UAE visit visa, you can actually use that same visit visa to go throughout the GCC. So they're promoting tourism within themselves.
Very nice. So continue on with your career.
Yeah. So I started off in petrochemicals with SABIC, and then I moved on to Octal Petrochemicals, which is a very interesting company. Today, Octal Petrochemicals brings 10% of the national income of Oman. It is a PET manufacturing company. After that, I went into telecom with Qatar Telco, and within Qatar, their offshoot brands, which is Notus and Wataniya and so forth, predominantly in the retail side and brand stores, retail stores and technology stores. Then after that, moved into a couple of government projects with the Dubai Plan 2021 and went back to my roots in retail and works for Majid Al Futtaim Group in holding, managed 25 shopping malls, 790 retail outlets, more than 100,000 stores within the shopping malls. And that also includes leisure and entertainment, cinemas, also construction projects with housing, multifamily, single family and apartments, as well, golf courses in certain areas. So mostly it's retail because as a landlord for shopping malls and facilities, which is the predominant place where you do your shopping in the GCC, you are the landlord for most of the brands like Sephora, Abercrombie, Apple, and so forth. Career highlights, Apple would be a good career highlight. Started working with Apple in Saudi Arabia with the first store-in-store concept. Before now, we have it everywhere in AT&T and T-Mobile and everywhere. They actually tested it out in Saudi Arabia with Mobily, the store-in-store concept with the Apple store selling the iPhone inside the store, which Saudi Arabia did not have the iPhone. But the concept, because it was far away, 9,000 miles away, they could actually test it out there. Then fast forward, doing a lot of work with Majid Al Futtaim Group, removing a lot of gray market products with Apple, clearing out the pathway for Apple to be a sole product, not a gray market product. I don't know, it's hard to explain with Apple, but gray market is people buying iPhones and selling them themselves and not being a premium Apple retailer. Cleared that out, especially with our stores with Carrefour, which we owned that did have gray market products with Apple and then became premium Apple premium retailer. That paved the way to Apple opening its first Middle East store, our presence, retail presence in our shopping mall, Mall of the Emirates, opening the first Apple store in the Middle East with Majid Al Futtaim Group.
Very nice. Very nice. So when and why did you join Ajax?
Ajax is a fascinating story. I joined Ajax after going into logistics, which I first came into the play where I started with as one of the first executives to come into Delivery Solutions, which is a omni-channel experience platform, an OXM, and that entitles people like Sephora or Abercrombie and Foot Locker to have Amazon-type services, to have offer same day, next day, and quicker deliveries without having a logistics tie-in to a single carrier. You can be agnostic on the carriers. It was acquired by UPS in May of 2022. And I exited after the acquisition to join Ajax to help them come into the global logistics post-acquisition from UPS. So I had a lot of retail experience, a lot of logistics experience, and really setting up companies here in the US and globalizing them within the global outreaches of e-commerce and freight.
And you live in Texas now, but you lived in the past, you lived in Dubai, you said?
Yes, I lived in the GCC, you can say, for 18 years. I was stationed in Dubai, but I took projects in Oman, Saudi, Bahrain, Qatar throughout those years. So 9 months in, 12 months in, a year. But the home, like you can say, where your head is, was the United Arab Emirates.
Yep. So when you're not there, what do you miss the most about GCC?
What I miss about the GCC is the mega projects. You don't see that much here in the US anymore, whereas building cities and building really massive mega projects to really highlight and making a destination. I think we lost that a long time here in the US. We still talk about Disney and stuff like that, but projects like Disney were destinations, right? So those big projects, destination projects, that's what I miss doing and making it a reality from an idea that somebody's sitting down thinking about to actually making it within 2 years, 3 years. So it's just, I don't know, US now to get a permit probably will take you 5 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a little different though. When you're in Saudi Arabia, you have a king, this very benevolent king, and says, hey, we're going to build the following things. And it's not, and let's face it, there's some advantages of being a king. You don't have to go to Congress and the Senate and appropriations. And
the monarchy, you could say, I'll explain it a little bit further for the audience. The monarchies are not he will say and we will do. It's quite different. I'll always compare things to Apple, you can say. So you have a lot of people at Apple employees, but they don't necessarily are following Tim Cook. They're following the brand Apple. Everybody falls in line with the brand. So you can say Saudi Arabia and the monarchy is the brand, you can say. So when the brand wants something, everybody follows suit towards the overall goal. It's not one person's, let's say, dictation. It's the brand's. It's Saudi. So it's the UAE. It's Dubai. So Dubai is the brand and everybody follows suit. So when the king or the crown prince has a vision, it's the brand. That's why they brand it as the Vision 2030. And it's not MBS told us to do so.
MBS, the king.
The crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman. So let's say Mohammed bin Salman is the brand. So the brand of the vision and everybody follows suit on that. That's why it's successful. That's why most of the GCC is becoming successful because the nation as a whole is following the brand vision of what Saudi is going to be in 2030 or 2040, 2050, and even Dubai for 2020. They have the expo. Riyadh now has the expo as well in 2030. These are big, major projects. So when you say expo, you got to build a city for it. It's not like here we have a couple of convention centers we put it in. They actually build cities for that specific expo. It's so mega projects.
Yeah, the mega projects are a little different. And I was just saw something the other day, and it occurred to me that this might be our next big infrastructure project. You can transport stuff in through tunnels, like containers, containerized freight, using magnetic. We have that technology that's around the world. And I keep thinking it's a low emissions. And I keep thinking we'll end up with some of those that go from New York to LA and all the places in between. And that is the equivalent of the expressways that we built in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And we worked. I live in Detroit, so we have expressways, but they shut them down 6 months a year to work on them. But anyway, let's switch.
I think they're doing the route from India all the way to Europe, and that's rail. It's efficient in its track. It's hard to do big tunnels or these, even the Hyperloop, they dabbed at it, and it didn't really work. It took too much, you can say, landscape to do.
Yep. Let's switch gears and let's talk about building a global logistics juggernaut. And that's part of this vision that they have in Saudi Arabia. And JGX is a Saudi Arabian company. And you told me when we were prepping, you said Dubai is the center of the logistics hub for the Middle East, for, let's just say, for consumer stuff. And Saudi Arabia wants to challenge them. They said, we want to be that hub. You also said something that I thought was interesting. We all hear about these wonderful projects going on in Dubai and people vacationing there. I was just talking to someone and they had gone there and they're like, hey, it's pretty cool. I watched some videos on it. It's a pretty impressive place. You told me the other day that they don't do oil there anymore. Please explain.
Yeah, this is part of the entire GCC is diversifying their industry, right? It's not only this is an oil well and that's all they do and that's all that's really outputted to the world. Diversifying away from oil means you have to go throughout the entire industry, let's say, little pieces, some logistics, healthcare, manufacturing, and so forth, and not relying on being forever a sole import country. So right now, the entire Middle East, or some of the Middle East, is a sole import country. Even the meats, the cows, the dairy, everything is imported. So diversifying out of that, you diversify the industries and you manufacture things and you become, you know, somewhat self-sufficient to a point where, you know, local heroes start coming out. So there's a lot of local heroes in the GCC, Al Mara'i for all the dairy products. And it's not only U.S. made or European imports, meats, local heroes in terms of supermarkets, Al Utaim markets. So many industries are becoming self-sufficient, and oil-based economies are not sustainable for the future, right? Because at one point, maybe Elon Musk create something, we don't need neither oil or anything, and we can self-levitate to something, then oil becomes non-relevant. So there is a tipping point to being a sole just oil-producing country and becoming self-sufficient in a way that becoming the industry leaders in their local markets. It doesn't have to be world leaders right now. It will take time, but soon you'll see a lot of these local heroes exporting. And it's not only oil, and it's going to be manufacturing. That goes the case with, for example, Alat is a new PIF company that came out. It's mandated by the Crown Prince, and ACs are going to be produced, refrigerators, all technologies are going to be locally produced.
Yes, it's interesting because, again, I told you before we hit record, there's a caricature that we have for every country. I've watched how Europeans and Asians and other people view us on YouTube, view the Americans. And they all have this sense that we're walking around with holsters, with guns, and we eat Burger King or McDonald's twice a day, which, by the way, some of these caricatures are based in a little bit of fact, but it makes this really narrow view of a country, right? But then when you come to the United States, you're like, it's a very big place for one, and it's diverse. Things are different in Ohio than they are in Oklahoma. And people who visit go, oh, actually nice people there. And they don't all shoot guns all day. And that's the same. We have a caricature, and we've just said of the Middle East, oh, yeah, it's just these terrorist states. But over time, we've all seen little things like Dubai and Saudi Arabia, there, you mentioned the mega projects. We have enormous progress being made there and a lot of affluent people there. There's always been the very wealthy people from oil, but now they're starting to see countries, cities like in Dubai and UAE and Saudi Arabia, where they have a lot of very successful people who have nothing to do with this, you know, I'll call it a little outdated caricature. They aren't terrorists. They don't like terrorists. They hate them just as much as we do.
Yes, absolutely. Look, you have to, the United States and Saudi Arabia have been allies since the 20s. And if you have different factions that come out, there's always a, you know, bad apple here and there, but it's not the country as a whole. Most of, you know, if you go to Saudi Arabia, you'll actually be astonished. It's a copy paste from any southern state here. And yeah, when I go to Saudi, I haven't left Dallas. The roads, the way the infrastructure is, the way Saudi Arabia is the only country in the GCC that has 911, and everybody else follows suit with England, which is 112. So Saudi Arabia is very American. It's extremely American. If you talk to any youngster in Saudi Arabia, they have American accents. They're Southern because all their teachers, they grew up with Southern teachers from Texas, Louisiana. Everybody goes and teaches there. So when you speak to a Saudi Arabian, everyone's, are you from Saudi? Or where are you from? Are you from down south? You'll be astonished that they have Southern accents. It's not like how they portray them in movies. They can't even speak and stuff right. Like that. So, and most of the generations that are now leading the countries are all Western educated. They come from Harvard, Princeton, Yale. They've all been educated in the West. And the local education as well is very modern and Westernized. They're producing great education there from King Abdullah Universities and all the, these are really top-notch.
Oh, yeah.
Top-level universities.
I grew up in Dearborn, Michigan, where there's a lot of Middle Eastern people there now. And there always was Middle Eastern when I was young. They lived on the other side of town from me, but I used to always think that. But then over time, I realized, oh, no, a lot of the people, like they started coming over 100 years ago. So there was like second and third generation.
Yes, exactly.
And what was crazy is I took some community college classes. I went to night school. So I was at community college. And I remember going to school with a lot of Arab kids. And they were so much better at math. And I was like, yeah, English is their second language, but they were killing it in the math classes. And I was like,
yeah, education over there is quite still, you know, pressing on. They have conjoined with English and French systems and all that. The American University of Beirut was established in the Lebanese American University was established in 1924. So American education has been there for ages. Most of these generations are all being educated. American University of Cairo. These are not like a brand name that somebody's franchising. These are actually American institutions that even the taxpayer pays for financial aid for most of these students. America is very involved in the Middle East in terms of education, infrastructure, helping out these countries really transform, especially from private businesses. So a lot of private businesses have really transformed themselves within the Middle East. For example, I'll give you Verifone. Verifone is a payment gateway. They have a payment, credit card payment machines. The most advanced Verifones are not launched in the U.S. They're actually launched in the GCC because their infrastructure is way ahead than the U.S. We had tap to pay 10 years before the U.S.
we're late on a lot of the technology, especially exactly. Like when you check out at a restaurant where we still give them our credit card and they walk in the back for 20 minutes and come back.
I had to readjust when I came here and everybody had to take my credit card. I'm like, why don't you just bring the machine? She's like, what do you mean bring the machine? The machine is stuck to a wall somewhere. And with that, in the entire GCC, since 10, 15 years ago, they had mobile and they have a SIM card in it. It's all mobile because the infrastructure there. And it took years for the United States to move to SIM, right? We were all CDMA. You had to take your phone. They had to program it. And the GCC or the Middle East started with SIM. So they were way more, they had a head start on technology than the US.
Yep. It's interesting because certain things become standards a place, and then it's hard to pull off that standard. But I'm a big believer, there's an old saying, and it's, I didn't make it up, but it's, if goods don't cross borders, armies will. So I'm a big believer that we need to do more trade. And by the way, if you look at some of the countries that we've had problems with, and I think Afghanistan's a perfect example, there's very little trade that they have with the rest of the world. And when you trade with countries, you have vested interests. All of a sudden you say, hey, I need them to be successful. But also you start to meet the people and go, hey, they're just like you and me, right? And that's important. And again, we are already trading with the GCC. All we're talking about now is doing more. So a few years back, and I'm trying to think of the guy's name, I did an interview with a guy who helped select the 3PL for Saudi Aramco. And at that time, I don't know if it's still the case. I think they've made some structural changes to that, but Saudi Aramco was the largest company in the world. And
it still is.
Yeah, it's a massive company. And at that, back in the day, they said, we did all of our logistics internally, and we were bringing all of the goods we needed for the whole country. So it wasn't just oil-related stuff. They were bringing textbooks, exactly, and medicine and food. And he said, over time, that became less necessary because we started trading with the rest of the world. But now, you said something to me the other day, and I'm gonna botch this quote, but you said, so give me the shopping cart stat. You gave me the average U.S. shopping cart, probably for Amazon, is $32. What is the average shopping cart?
About $32 to $40 here in the U.S., and it's about $453 in Saudi.
Why is that? Are they just buying higher end stuff? Are they buying more stuff online because they
know? No, because the convenience of now e-commerce in Saudi Arabia is for them not to go, let's say, go to the shopping mall, go get the necessities are now accessible. So this is the same. You got to think about it in brick and mortar. They go to the supermarket or they go to their stores and everything. They buy their stuff straight from the shopping mall. And that's the average spend within that. Now it's becoming e-commerce. So nothing's really changed from brick and mortar, but it's now transcribing itself into e-commerce. So the same person that wants to go to the shopping mall, do 1, 2, and 3, will do the same exact thing on e-commerce. So last mile and e-commerce trade has really shifted the dynamics of convenience and not really taken up away from the shopping malls, because the shopping malls are still essential because they're culturally essential. They're hot countries, they're destination places, and they're not shopping malls in the sense of how Americans think of a shopping mall. They are entertainment destinations. Every time you go to a shopping mall in Saudi or Dubai, it's like walking into Disneyland. There's always a concert somewhere. There's always something happening in one aisle. There's entertainment all the time. I manage these malls because every month I had to have at least 10 events in a month happening. So if you walk into a shopping mall on Monday, there's always something happening. And Tuesday, it's something different happening. So the brick and mortar and e-commerce now it's becoming ubiquitous, whereas it's becoming a convenience. However, the destination places are still same destinations. Now, technology is going to take something that's going to be the next level, I say, which is ship from store. The GCC still don't have the ship from store. Most of it is ship from DC. Once the retailers grasp that my retail destination is also a logistics destination, where ship from store is going to be essential, because shopping malls are in a primary trade area. We call it PTA and SDA, which is secondary trade area, whereas the clusters. So if you're going to go to DC, which is probably 25, 30 minutes away, that's not going to be quick, you can say. But shopping mall is 10 minutes or 5 minutes away from you, and ship from store is going to really revolutionize e-commerce in the GCC in total, and which is now still, there's a borderline. People go to the mall or shopping e-commerce, but why can't they do ship from store?
Yep. So people want to buy online, and they're buying a lot. They're $453. And it's an affluent country. And we're talking just about Saudi Arabia right now, but eventually this will entail every part of this region. So if I'm Amazon or if I'm any other of the e-commerce sellers, and increasingly high-end brands say, we will go it alone. We might sell a little bit on Amazon, but our website is where we want to sell from. All those companies want to sell to that market. But if they want to, and they want to buy from them, The challenge right now is the logistics one. So if I, let's just say somebody buys something on Amazon and they live in Saudi Arabia, how do they get it?
Amazon bought a company called Souq.com, which is equivalent to an Amazon, for $900 million. This was back in 2014. So Amazon is already established. There is an Amazon Saudi and everything. But all the products on Amazon Saudi and all that are localized products or from China. So the same exact thing. But there are a lot of items that are European or American are shipped through Amazon via US and all that. But there's a shipping fee, which is, if you're in Saudi, you want an Amazon product from the US, it's going to be like shopping from Wish.com, which is going to probably take you 10 or 14 days. So you don't get that convenience, even though you're on the Amazon platform. So with, let's say, Ajax partnership and Amazon, which we do, is it really takes that Amazon experience to the Saudi customer. So both levels in terms of Saudi experience, being in Saudi and shopping for American products, plus an Ajax integration or partnership really moves the product way quicker, because Amazon, they can't really shape shift for a certain market. They do what they have to do. And then local partners like us really take the Amazon experience globally, at least for Saudi Arabia.
So much of the world uses, I think, if they're buying something on Amazon, if Amazon's not in their region, they use these shop and ship. Is that the right term?
Yes, they use US address or shop and ship. So what these platforms provide them is a US address, and you can shop online and use any type of credit card. And you put in a US address, which ships to that address here in the US, and then it's forwarded to the UAE or to Saudi Arabia, which also takes 12 days, 14 days.
When we talk here on my podcast, we talk about this magical world of same day, next day, although it's not necessarily something we all need all the time. It's nice that you can have that. They don't have the equivalent. So here you have this very affluent market over there that desperately wants to buy from us. And Amazon has partners, but a lot of other brands, I imagine, say, you got to do a shop and ship service with if you want to buy from us, because they're not going to ship it there because they don't know how.
They've gotten used to that, right? Because the access to the, before Amazon, before everybody came into the market, they were always used to getting that product through those freight forwarders or shopping forwarders. So it's very essential to move the culture or the shopping culture away from that. Those are great products and they do amazing things and people have used them. I was a customer for them for more than like 11, 12 years. That's how I accessed the United States. But now those direct shippers or direct retailers are really moving forward with using Ajax or using, let's say, good carriers to move their product at the same experience, right? If you're on Amazon, you don't know who the carrier is. You're shopping at Amazon. So for you, you don't care who the carrier is as long as the carrier delivers the Amazon experience. And hence, that's how we're doing it. So we are taking the retailer's experiences and not really changing it.
Yep.
So if you can shop at Sephora and get it in a couple of days, you can shop at Sephora in the U.S. You can shop in Saudi at Sephora U.S. and still get the same experience in 4 days.
Very nice. 4 days is a lot better than 14. And again, yeah. We know this. People buy more if they can get it the next day. It happens that way all the time. I hear that all the time, I should say. We take it for granted here. And again, if I'm ordering something because I have an event, I'm ordering a new shirt or a new pair of pants or something. I don't know. I don't want to buy it 2 weeks in advance. I don't want to plan that way. And we don't have to here. But if you're in one of the GCC countries, you're tied to this 14 days. And again, if you're a US company, you want to be able to say, I want to provide great service to those customers. I want to grow my international sales. We struggle with our e-commerce getting over the borders in Canada and Mexico. So we're leaving huge markets.
The U.S. market is very localized. And when you talk international, it feels like it's a headache for them. So hence why they divert all their international operations to franchisees who own it and supply the stores and mostly brick and mortar. But when it comes down to e-commerce, they also throw it off to like Global-e or Global Access, where they do all the sorting. However, the experience is not shared, right? So when you have the brand that is really intrinsically tied to their experience, they really sort it out from there. And that's where we're gaining traction. We're not only selling the service, right? The logistics, the last mile, they do all the cross-border, the headache that comes with, we can solve all that. But we also solve the cross-border brand experience. This is what's really enticing these retailers to come to Ajax or integrating with Ajax through their cross-border platforms, because we're continuing the brand experience. Because I shouldn't be held victim to my territory just because I live a little bit far. Sephora is a global brand, let's say. But if you go to a store in Lithuania or in Riyadh or in Miami, it's all Sephora. It doesn't change. So why should it change on e-commerce?
Yeah, it's a funny thing. Once something is on the internet, it is almost by definition global. And when I started looking at my stats for the podcast, I was surprised to see that 70% of my, or wasn't surprised to see 70% of my audience was here. I was surprised that these other 30%, and you go, Canada, I get, we're right next door. But then you start to realize, yeah, there's a whole bunch of countries and where English isn't necessarily the first language, and they still listen to my podcast. And I think, okay, this is just the international nature of business right now. And we have to grow. And I, by the way, it also occurs to me, we're competing here in the US, let's just say, if you're an e-commerce company, and you're going head to head with all these companies, and you're saying, God, how do we get an extra 1% of business? And then meanwhile, not selling to the rest of the world because we don't have the infrastructure set up. And you mentioned something
about part of the education process, right? So when they look at the US market, I always sell Saudi Arabia as Saudi Arabia is the market of California, Texas, and New York combined. So if you're a little here in the US or in terms of retail, you're stagnating, just look at Saudi. You just added three more states.
Big states.
I mean, it's a no-brainer, right? If you need to do a trade and you're not, let's say, something's fluctuating, Saudi Arabia is a great market to look at because it's three states combined and it has that the cart power to really take your business forward, even if you're a small business, a large enterprise business, and so forth.
You said something to me the other day also that I was struck by. You said there's a big car culture in Saudi Arabia. And you said, but there's no aftermarket automotive company. So they all are doing using these shop and ship services. So they're basically sending to an address here in the US, and then a container gets full and then they ship it over there. And so if you're the aftermarket automotive companies, you don't even have an address for the people you're sending it to. You maybe have their address, but you basically are sending everything to one address. And what we all want is we want to know what zip code our customers in. We want to understand the demographics. We want to understand who we're selling to. If all is one shipping address for a whole country.
Yeah. Your CRM will not really segment, especially by, you'll have one address that buys every single car product ever. So you really can't really do much segmenting and targeted marketing and sales. If you're in AutoZone, if you are an O'Reilly, you're in those markets right now are the hottest markets for you because they only have one source of car parts, which is from the dealer, and there's only one dealer for each car manufacturer. So Ford, let's say you can only buy from Al Jazeera, which is the Ford, let's say, dealer over there. And those are the parts that you get. And if you have an older Ford, they have to order it for you. You have to wait. But if you're on alternative, you have to go online and wait for 10 to 15 days for that part to come. I advocate a lot of these aftermarket sellers. Open your doors, e-commerce, for the Saudi market, because you have all types of amazing cars, all year models, you can say, that are ready for car parts aftermarket.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they tune them up, and they classic cars are very essential to them as well. So it's very important to look at the market.
Car people are, they will spend on that stuff, and there is a hungry market over there, and they love to customize. So it's not like they're like, it's not like, oh, what does the dealer have? They're looking for, what is the coolest thing I can get on my car?
The Mustangs, the Broncos, the GMCs, all the muscle, American
Jeeps,
muscle cars.
Come on.
And they have to wait ages for a screw.
So people can work with Ajax. So in an e-commerce company, let's just say they're selling mostly in the U.S. and maybe just say North America, U.S., Canada, Mexico. If they heard the podcast, they said, Norhan, I want to sell to the GCC. I'm doing some of these shop and ship services. Tell them how they work with you.
We have a direct integration. Basically, we're technology based. So either it's an API or however you do your e-commerce, we natively integrate with you guys. And then you'll have us as a carrier and we open up the market for you. Basically, you'll have Saudi Arabia over there. We'll help you out with marketing. We'll help you out to who to target. Not only as a logistics company, we encourage these companies to come and really sell to the market out there. We'll help them out. We have a large database of all our shippers, and we are people that are sent shipments to, and you can target them. You can send an outreach to them all that you're open for business in Saudi, and they can visit your website and buy direct, and all shipments will be covered via Ajax.
In 4 days, right?
4 days max. It depends on where that shipment is coming from, but most of it is 4 days. So if you shop on Monday, you should get it in Wednesday, basically. If you shop, it's delivered on Monday, you should get it on Wednesday in Saudi from the U.S.
That's fantastic. So again, this opens up a big market. And I've heard people who are in the e-commerce business say this to me many times, is that the faster you can get it there, the more likely they are to buy. One of the things we've learned with same day, next day is people tend to buy more because it's more immediate. And that's fantastic. So now you guys are working out, the name of the podcast is Building a Global Logistics Juggernaut. Is Ajax already global? Do you work worldwide?
Yes, we are. Saudi is currently, we're headquartered in Saudi. We have offices in Dallas and Atlanta. We're also in London, and we are in China and Turkey.
And you guys are
full service.
Yep. And you said something to me the other day. I think I said it earlier in the podcast, but I think it was interesting. You said right now, Dubai is the central hub for logistics in the Middle East. And Saudi Arabia has got this, again, affluent market, a large market, and says, hey, why not us? A lot of stuff that's going to Dubai could come straight here.
Yes. So Dubai had that advancement of building the airports and the logistics hubs way before Saudi caught up to it. So now Saudi Arabia is, let's say, building it from scratch and competing with the UAE. Now, UAE had their head start with their logistics, also Emirates Airlines, Etihad Airlines, Dubai Ports, for example. They all focused on that at the time, and that was their mandates. So we're now doing what Dubai did 15, 20 years ago, and we're building at scale. Now, everybody has to understand that the GCC market itself, most of the GCC operators or retail brands or retail franchisees, most of their revenue comes from Saudi Arabia. It's the largest population. If you're a Dubai-based company, most of your money comes from Saudi because you know, you're going to sell to the 9 million people in the UAE. However, most of them are in the service market. So you probably have 2 million customers rather than 37 million right next door.
Right.
So it's a different dynamic. So it's a service industry in Dubai. However, it's most of the trade, most of it lands in Dubai and it's freighted into Saudi. So if you're, again, you're Nike, most of the Nike sales are in Saudi and not in Dubai. You have to also see the population density. You have a lot of people in the service industry in Dubai, which are hotels and stuff like that. It's basically an entertainment facility. And some of the smaller population live there in daily commerce. And if you're a big retail brand, most of your revenue comes from Saudi Arabia and not from the United. But United Arab Emirates made it convenient for people to live there, entertainment and being an expat and so forth.
Oh, it's a trading hub too.
Exactly. So they made it there. So then now Saudi's opening all the doors now for that. So taking the population from 37 million or 32 million today to 55 million by in the next 5 years is not the Saudis making babies. It's actually the Saudi population, which is a very large, 30 million Saudi, 32 million Saudi, and then adding another 20 to 25 million expats on top of that.
Really? Really? So that's the goal, is to grow the country via expats, and those expats would obviously be there for business,
talent,
right?
Basically, we don't call it expats. We're going to grow it with the best talent in the world. So I say this, if you're a young person right now in your 20s, drop everything, get out of town. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell your parents. Don't tell your friends. Just get on a plane, go to Saudi, and you will accelerate in life. Because in the next 5 years and so on, Saudi Arabia is going to have the first world in the world, the first country in the world to have the first 1,000 billionaires.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I always say I'm a baby boomer. I'm one of the younger baby boomers. When I went to school, when I did pay attention, what I did learn is, and this was true at the time, there was one economy in the world worth talking about. It was here. We did not grow up with the idea that we should trade with Mexico. There was nothing to trade with. Mexico was not what it is today. We didn't learn Spanish. We learned French at school, which now makes no sense. But, and then our vision after we became international became, let's look to Europe. And I think over the last generation, it's become, let's look to this Latin America. Let's look to Asia. We still don't look to Middle East and North Africa. And we should, because that is a fast-growing market. And again, I think there's caricatures of countries, and we all have them in our head. It's the shorthand we have. When we think of Latin America, it's 30 countries. But we tend to think of them as just one persona. That's not.
It's always late to the game, right? So a lot of U.S. businesses focus locally and then they forget about the rest of the world because they were successful here. I'll give you the case of Uber, for example. Uber became an instant sensation around the world. However, they were late to the game on a lot of other places where there were bigger markets. So Uber, for example, when they were introduced to the Middle East, they were late to the game because there was already a player called Karim doing the same exact thing. And then after, fast forward, they try to compete with these guys. Fast forward, they had to buy them out for $2 billion. And this is a local startup, made the same exact, they just basically copycatted. Whereas you had to pay $2 billion right now to catch up. Whereas if you did what you did here in the US in the same market, you focus or invested the same way, you would have not had to pay $2 billion to buy somebody out in order for you to get market share.
Yeah. It's also interesting. I said this the other day when we were having a conversation. I think I was watching like what is selling in New Zealand and Australia, which was different for kids, and it was the kid market. A lot of US brands were super popular there that weren't having the same success here. And the US has always, one of the things we've exported the most is our culture. We made the movies, we had all of that. But as the world advances, we're starting to see obviously Bollywood and other cultures having different fashion and
fashions, exactly.
And a lot of times those could be US brands that say, we're a little out of favor here, it's so fickle. But what if you can catch on in another country?
It's funny to say that Kevin Costner was in Saudi Arabia just recently. He was being awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award in Saudi for his contributions to acting at an award show called Joy Awards. And it's part of the government's entertainment authority. And he said that exact statement, that he had a film that didn't really take off here in the US. And then fast forward, I think like 10, 15 years later, he was in Italy, and everybody was really mesmerized by one of the flops, a movie that flopped in the US, but it was a big hit in Italy. He explained that while he was getting awarded in Saudi about how things that probably don't work here will work amazing around the world. So never lose hope or don't lose focus being a global citizen. Not only I flopped in the US, that means there's nothing out there for me.
Yeah, there's a guy, I'll botch this story just a little bit. My sister's married to a guy who was born in South Africa, born to Italian parents in South Africa. And as he was growing up, there was this singer whose name was, I think it's Rodriguez. And he's from, I think he lived in Dearborn where I grew up, or right in Detroit, back and forth, I believe. But he worked in Dearborn. And this Rodriguez, he was, I think there's a movie called Finding Sugarman, but he was the voice of the change that they all wanted there. So this is what the young people, he was everything. He was the top musician there, unknown here, completely unknown here. He was working, I believe, like at a factory here. And my brother-in-law says, we all just thought he just passed away because this is the voice of the new world that we want to live in. And he was king there. And I don't think he recognized how important he was there. And that's just, it just caught on there and didn't catch on here until he was very old. I don't know if he's still alive, but that's a weird thing. But it's the norm now. I watched some videos where brands that are in disfavor, nothing wrong with them, just the teenagers started wearing something else and everyone followed suit.
Followed through.
But the same thing. Somebody picked it up over in New Zealand and said, hey, this is cool. I want to start wearing this. Okay. So yeah, again, this is a global market. And as we fight like hell to get a few extra market points here in the States, maybe we can sell something in, again, a very affluent market that desperately wants to do some business.
Absolutely.
So what I'll do, and I'll make sure I'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile and a link to your website and any other links you give me. But it's interesting. This is all very interesting because I feel like as an American, sometimes we just don't hear these stories enough. And we needed this global logistics juggernaut that you're talking about. We need that infrastructure to sell to these people. The thing that's holding us back, we have a market that wants to buy, and we have obviously sellers here that want to sell. What we're lacking is the infrastructure until now, until Ajax. So do you also work with other logistics companies?
Yes, we work with every logistics. So we are, in terms of capacity, so we don't own our boats, right? So we have to work with freighters, also other airline, cargo airline operators. In terms of last mile within Saudi Arabia, territory of Saudi Arabia, we are full capacity. We have our cars. We have the largest warehouses in Saudi Arabia and largest warehouse network. We also own our own customs and clearance. We're authorized by the government to do our customs and clearance, hence so that we can do a lot of quicker shipments, wheels up, cleared, lands in Saudi, straight to last mile. A lot of the DC and sorting, pick and packing and all that, we eliminate and straight to come out of the plane, land the plane and straight into a car, straight to the person's house.
Yeah, you told me, I said, I know it's a lot of landmass, Saudi Arabia. And I was asking you before we hit record, how can you do in a final mile if it's 10 hours away? And you said the vast majority of the population is within the big cities, right?
Yes. So there's a lot of desert. There's a lot of open land, but you have city clusters like Riyadh, Jeddah, Dammam. And these are cluster cities. And soon Neom is going to be a cluster city where everybody's there. So you're at a reach 10, 15 minutes max within those cities. Now, Riyadh is a little bit bigger, but still where the airport is located and where the cluster is, it's still attainable within 30, 40 minutes.
Man, when you say there's all that sand, it reminds me of Texas. I'm too pale for all that sand. And when there's sand, the sun is always too hot for pale people like me.
Well, the Texas desert is not that bad. There's a lot of prairie land here in Texas, so it's a lot of flat. And Nevada is where you think about it. So it's how Nevada's land geographically it looks like.
Okay.
So you have those little mountainous regions and you have that little dry spots.
Most of the time when you go to Nevada, you go to Vegas, which I don't think gives the beauty of that state credit, because it is an absolutely beautiful state. If you drive a little outside the strip and see what they have there, it's gorgeous.
Gorgeous, yeah. Nevada actually has a very closer geography towards the Sultanate of Oman. So it's very mountainous Oman everywhere, and it has those little flatlands in front of the beaches.
I love it. I love it. Noreen, I'm going to try and summarize this big topic. But the topic is building a global logistics juggernaut with my friend Norhan Behrouti. We're talking about the need that we have for the GCC countries to be connected and to do business with the rest of the world is we need a global logistics juggernaut. We need the infrastructure. We have people who want to buy and we all want to sell. It's also an affluent, fast-growing area. And these are customers we desperately want to sell to. But it's not easy. And so we need this global logistics juggernaut to connect us. And then also, when you think of those consumers, they aren't going to want to buy if it's a 14-day to get it. Right? We got to get to that 2-3-4-day place, which we all know drives additional sales. Anyway, put a big old bow on this one, Norhan.
I say for my final thoughts is, logistics is no longer a cars, planes, automobiles game. It is a technology game. Saudi Arabia is very technologically advanced, and it's a technology play. So if you're a retailer right now, connecting to Saudi is not via the ship or the airplane or whatever. It's a very much a technology link. So if you can integrate, basically you've opened the market, you've brought it closer towards you. So the market out there is not attainable, is not unattainable. It's very attainable, and it's a technology play. So for all those listeners out there, how am I going to do this? It's basically an API. You can connect to Saudi Arabia with an API, and you'll have that market the size of California, Texas, and New York combined. So don't think of it in terms of distance. Think of it as a technology play right now. So if you're an e-commerce person, you should be connected within a day to Saudi Arabia. That market can open up in a matter of hours. So if you can play the technology game, connect, we're technology connected as well. We'll connect you on that distance, but we want everybody to understand that connecting to Saudi Arabia is no longer the distance, it's the technology. So just connect, basically. Send an email.
Yep. Again, I'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile, link to your website, and any other links you give me, I'll put in the show notes so people can reach out and talk to you. What conferences will we see you and the fine folks from Ajax at?
Previously, we're at Shop Talk and NRF here in the US. In Europe, we're going to the World Retail Congress. This is happening in a few weeks in April. And then we're going to be in Seamless Dubai in May.
Yep. And I guess since you're going to be in Europe, that I've implied that this is all about US and Saudi Arabia and the GCC, this also applies to Europe and Asia. You guys are a global country.
We're connected in Europe. We have Volga Closet. We have a lot of e-commerce people coming out of Europe. We're also connected with Turkey, with Trendyol, and also China. So we're global. We're doing a lot of e-commerce out of Europe as well, even shipping. We have the fastest lane, which is 9 days to Saudi Arabia. Others are like in the 20s. So also our fastest shipping lanes going straight in terms of freight.
I love it. I love it. So much brand new to me, but it all makes so much sense. Again, it feels like we need the logistics networks to catch up to the demand that the world already has.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Norhan. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yep. And thank all of you for listening to my podcast. Your support's very much appreciated. Until next time, onward and upward. You have been listening to the Logistics of Logistics podcast, where we engage with leaders in the logistics and supply chain community. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, hit the like button, and leave us a nice review on Apple or Spotify or wherever else you listen. Also, please check out our videos on YouTube and connect with us on LinkedIn. We're very big on LinkedIn. And you can also reach us on the logisticsoflogistics.com, our website.